Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, you know plenty of nerds, so get on it. I was sick and I got laryngitis and then I kept going out on the New York club scene for a week, having to yell out over people's voices.
The New York club scene.
And then I was like, hey, now I've permanently damaged my vocal cords.
Cool.
Good for me.
Yeah.
Because I don't need them at all in my industry.
Yeah, exactly. It's the one thing you
need. I was a little scared, actually. I thought I had nodules, but I didn't go to get it checked out. Anyway, back
well,
to us.
Well, you obviously didn't have to. Last question. The serious thing, it's coming together. It's called Game Changers?
Yeah, it's called Game Changers.
I love that.
Yeah, good,
I
right?
love that. Really good.
Yeah, we did a whole thing on Serena. So the 19th, it'll be coming out. I ran into Sandra Bernhardt. Oh, and Judy Gold. Yesterday.
Who's Judy Gold?
So you've never heard of Judy Gold? Do you know
no.
Judy Gold?
Is she a comedian?
She's a comedian. She's fucking
I feel like I'd probably see that. No,
she
face.
Did a bit at the LPAC event for us. She was our closing act. Oh, yeah. My God, I peed my pants. Although I did tell her yesterday she's got someone she wants to set me up with. And I texted her and I said, yeah, and let Great. Me know when you're doing a stand-up because I'd like to come because the LPAC piece you did made me piss my pants. Although I'm 47, so it might be bladder leakage, but it's a 50-50 chance it was you.
It's either you or I'm incontinent. So is she going to hook you up with somebody?
Yeah, she's already on the works.
Oh, we're taping.
Oh, great.
Just getting levels.
Sure. Here we go.
I didn't say it was going to be a hot mic after
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I use any of that?
You can use all of it.
You're the best. You're the best, Renee Stubbs. It's nice to see your face in person.
Hey, nice to see your face.
You survived the U.S. Open Series and the U.S. Open.
I did. And it's been a long summer.
It has been
Indeed.
A long summer. I know. We have seen each other. We've raised some glasses together. But we haven't actually taped an episode.
No, we haven't. Not for a while. I had this feeling that I was going to grab all these players at the US Open and have, you know, loads of podcasts downloaded for everybody and all our listeners. But instead, I was working like 14-hour days and was unable to grab 45 minutes with anybody that I wanted to, including Darren Cahill. But we're going to get to him at some point.
Good.
I might grab him in China.
Good. You, just so everyone knows, were both doing your normal duties for ESPN, which were the highest rated I saw for years and years.
Yes, the highest rated for a long time. But the women's final got over 3 million viewers and the men's got 2 million.
Wah-wah for the men. Mm. Don't worry, we're going to get to that in a bit. And also I got a text from my friend Don, among the myriad of people I met at the US Open, who told me that they love our podcast and they love you. And, you know, a lot of them love me, honestly.
Well, I need more people to love me in other ways. But, Caitlin,
right.
That's a whole different podcast.
That's our relationship podcast coming soon.
What is that called? What are we going to call
Love Schooled.
Oh, okay.
With our friend Andrea Pekovic.
Yeah.
a very strange adventure through romance and advice. But a lot of people, including my friend Don, said that you were their favorite commentator.
Oh, well, thank you, Don. I appreciate that.
In addition to that, you were coaching.
I was coaching, yeah. I got called up by Karolina Pliskova literally at the airport at LaGuardia flying to Montreal to work for ESPN. She just said, would you finish out the year with me, basically? And my commitments to ESPN and not wanting to sort of cross-pollinate with other players and not have any players, I mean, basically pissed off at me because I'm supporting one player over them and I have to interview them and I have to analyze matches. So it's a slight conflict that I don't want to really, that I can't really avoid at the moment, but I really want to help her through the year. And so we'll see where that goes. And hopefully ESPN understand that I'm trying to do what I love as well, which is coach. I feel like I coach when I commentate. So
you do.
We're going to finish out the year together, and we'll see if I can get her back on track a little bit, get her confidence up.
Well, you're not the only commentator who coaches, obviously. Lindsay Davenport on the Tennis Channel coaches from time to time, Madison Keys. Darren Cahill, your ESPN colleague, does a lot of coaching, is the main coach for Simona Halep, although he commentates on men's matches as a policy.
That's sort of where they can get around a little bit. He works with the men and obviously commentates the men and works with a female player. So it's not really that bad. So for me, it just, have this little bit of fine line and making sure that all the players understand that I still respect them and appreciate all that they do and not try and, make it uncomfortable for them.
Well, you're bringing an objectivity that I think serves you well as a commentator too, which is that you're seeing the game in a way that is super, super instructive, especially for those of us watching along at home. Like your doubles commentating in particular, which makes me just so excited to watch more and more doubles, is super, super useful because that's what most people play recreationally. And not that many people watch doubles, but you call doubles in a way that, very, very few people can, where it's both
I'm
expert.
Involved.
You're involved. Yeah.
I'm fully involved. I'm like dissecting the match and seeing what I would do in those matches. The U.S. Open final was a fabulous match, 7-6 in the third. It was match points galore for both teams. So one of those teams was always going to be disappointed. And in the end, it was Ash Barty and Coco Vandeweghe, who won their first Grand Slam title ever together, beating Mladenovic and Babos, who had won the Australian Open earlier this year. So they would have been disappointed because they had a set and had two match points in the second set. And then they had, I believe, a match point in the tiebreak as well, so in the third. So it was an unbelievably entertaining match. And the great thing about it was it had backed up right into the men's final. Was it the final? Yeah, men's final on Sunday. Yeah. So they had an enormous crowd, which is such a great feeling. That happened to me, actually, the first year I won my first Grand Slam in Australia. Our final took almost 3 hours, so it had backed up into the men's semifinal at the Australian Open. So it was an absolutely packed crowd. So for me, that moment of winning my first Grand Slam in front of my hometown, that would have been for Coco, in front of this full stadium was amazing. Because we, sadly don't get to have that opportunity. And they loved it. The crowd loved it. And I'm sure people watching at home loved it as well. So
I sat and watched both Babos and Mladenovic as well as a lot of the men's doubles matches. And truly, truly, in addition to advising people who, whenever they can, should just go and sit and watch elite tennis, whether you've heard of the player or not, but also make time to watch doubles. It's so great. It's so fast. And the crowd really does get into it because you can see all these different tactics and speed and it's incredible. And communication and teamwork.
The mixed doubles was fun. Obviously, Bethany Maddox-Sands coming back from that massive knee injury last year at Wimbledon, came back and won another Grand Slam title with Jamie Murray. And Jamie lost in the finals of Wimbledon in the mixed and then was also the defending champion of the mixed doubles at the US Open. So back-to-back wins for him. So that's a great continued story for the Murray family and also for Bethany Maddox-Sands to come back and have that exposure to another Slam title. So the US Open was very exciting, the doubles and the mixed, and of course the singles, but we're going to get to that.
We're going to get to that. Okay, so leading up to that, let's go through the US Open series. Last time we checked in, you were up in Canada.
I was in San Jose, then I went to Canada, and then I went to Cincinnati to coach Carolina, and then I was in New Haven, Connecticut, and then eventually onto the US Open. So it was a very busy summer for me.
Yeah.
San Jose was won by Buzanescu, and then sadly for her, the following week, she rolled her ankle terribly in Montreal. So sad to see that happen after rising, I believe, into the top 20 for the first time. And then the Montreal tournament was incredible, as it always is. Your hometown.
My hometown, yeah.
Where they freaking love their tennis.
Yeah,
it's amazing how much support they get there.
Given that you can only play it outside for about 2 months a year, they really get excited about it. Maybe that's why, yeah.
Yeah, there's no umbrellas. There's no hats. They're just like loving the sun.
They're soaking up the sun.
And it was bloody hot. But anyway, Simona Halep played Sloane Stephens in the final there.
That was a great final.
Absolutely one of the best matches I've seen.
Totally.
The entire year. It was probably top three behind Halep and Kerber at the Australian Open and the Halep Wozniacki final at the Australian Open. This match was unreal. I mean, when I sit courtside and do these matches and I want to stand up and clap, I know it's a good match.
Yeah.
Because I sit and watch a lot of friggin' tennis.
What I loved about it is obviously it was a replay of the French Open final where we had Halep and Sloane. And Sloane, I mean, she's unbelievably athletic and skilled and turns offense into defense and defense into offense. You know, you can't quibble with anything she does on the court, but sometimes people, I think, who I've talked to have a hard time getting behind her because it doesn't feel like she is emotionally invested.
Yeah.
Whether or not that's true, you felt it in Montreal.
Oh, my God.
She was in that match.
Oh, I think I've seen that since she won the US Open. I saw a change in her when she came back from her injuries through the summer last year and then obviously the US Open. I think she won every match at the US Open, I believe, in almost three sets, mm-hmm. except the final. She won comfortably.
You're talking about last year against
last
Keys.
Year at the US Open, right. Yeah. And then obviously she's had, you know, she had some tough times after that, losing, I believe, six or seven first rounds, including the Australian Open. But then when she digs her heels in, she becomes this different person. And I saw that at the French Open at the beginning of the tournament. I did pick her to get through, and she did. And then, you know, she ran out of steam in the third set mm-hmm. against Halep because Halep just tortures you, literally tortures you.
Yeah.
I mean,
side
our friend
side,
Andrea
Pekovic
has said it's like fucking hell playing yeah. her, you know. And then in Montreal, again, up a set, you know, lost the first set. And I thought, well, this will be interesting to see what happens. And she dug in yeah. again and dug in so tough in the second set. And then again in the third set, and it was up and down, and you didn't know who was going to win. So for me, that was one of the great matches that I've seen all year. I please pray God that they're in many Grand Slam semis or finals in the coming years because they're both young and, man, they play some great tennis.
Their matchup is really
yeah,
compelling.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. I would have loved to have seen that at any time through the summer. So then New Haven was, Aryna Sabalenka, who had an unbelievable summer.
I love her.
I mean, this girl came back from, she's freaking Lazarus. She came back from match points down, left, right, and center against Wozniacki, Pliskova, because I had to watch that. Garcia.
Yeah.
Shit, I can't remember. There were so many. There were so many matches that she won down match point.
What was it? Montreal quarters, Cincinnati semis. New Haven victory,
yeah.
right?
I mean, unbelievable.
She was a bulldozer, top 10 players falling left and right. I love her. I just want to say I have loved her from the jump.
From last year's Fed Cup?
From last year's Fed Cup. I was like, who is this kid? She put all of Belarus on her back, not to discredit Sasnovich.
Who did a pretty bloody great job
Who
as
did
well.
A great job as well. But just, you know, who is this kid? She looks like Athena.
It's like her and Sasnovich are so different, though, because Sasnovich looks like she just walked off the street. And who is this kid?
She's like hey, I guess
she's
I'll
like
play
a
some
greyhound.
Yeah.
She's like a little bit of a greyhound, and she sort of doesn't change her facial expressions. One of the funniest people you'll ever interview because she has quite the quick sense of humor. I saw her get to the finals after getting through qualifying in Brisbane earlier this year. And I thought, who's this kid? And I remember talking about these guys to Lisa Raymond, who's the coach of the Fed Cup team for the US. And I said, oh, the Americans are going to win so easily in the final. They played nobody.
And Vika wasn't
Azarenka
there.
Wasn't
yeah,
there.
Exactly.
And she's like, no, Renee, honestly, these girls are really good. I'm telling you, you're going to be surprised. And man, was I surprised.
Yeah.
But Sabalenka sort of put herself on the map there and this crowd. And I thought, who is this chick? She does look like Zena. She should be in bloody Wonder Woman. She could be the next Wonder Woman.
Totally.
But her coach refers to her after she beat Carolina in Cincinnati. I walked by him. He goes, oh, it's tough to beat her when she goes into beast mode.
Beast mode.
And I was like, oh, that is so appropriate.
Totally. And she's got this massive tiger tattoo. I ran into her in the parking lot in Indian Wells.
That.
Well, I love that because I love tattoos.
Did you guys compare?
We did. Yeah, we compared tattoos. And she was like, oh, yes, I got it in Minsk. It is because I'm near the tiger. And I was like, well, that's really cool, and I like it. You know,
Racket What's yours?
I have a giant owl on my arm.
What does an owl symbolize?
Just my grandmother, who's cool and taught me how to play tennis.
Okay,
she had giant
eyeglasses.
Now I
feel like shit.
Yeah,
thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Well,
no, but she, and then she's like fierce and 6 feet tall and comparing tattoos. And then she was like, thank you. It was nice to meet you. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was expecting
she's
you to like tear your shirt open and like,
you
I don't
think
know.
She's going to be like, get away from me.
Blood
she's
sacrifice.
Hi, thank you so much. I mean, she's sweet.
I'm super pumped for her.
Yeah,
her
yeah.
ascendance on the WTA Tour means great things.
Well, the best match of the US Open was the Osaka-Sabalenka.
By a mile.
Quarterfinal was unreal.
Unreal.
And I think if Sabalenka had won that match, we might have
She'd
been
the
crowning
tournament.
Her the US Open.
100%.
Because they have the same lack of fear, the two of them. And it was just like, when we saw that they were playing each other, ESPN crew, sadly we didn't get to see a lot of it on the TV because Djokovic was playing at the same time. Mm-hmm. And you know, the powers that be wanted to see Djokovic. You know, he's a bigger name, and so for numbers and all that sort of stuff, I understand it from the TV side. But we, the women particularly at ESPN, were fucking jammed up going, this is going to be the match of the tournament. These two are so awesome, and they're young, and this is the future of women's tennis.
Uh-huh.
And, man, they gave us exactly what we expected. So look out for Sabalenka. She'll be my dark horse, there's no doubt about it.
She's going to get a Grand Slam in the next 2 years. I mean, right?
100%.
I hope that we get that matchup time and time and time again, and I feel like we will.
We'll get, like, you know, and this is what we have to start talking about on the women's side. We have Zabalenkas and those Osakas and, you know, now Sloane Stephens solidifying yourself as a, you know, contender. Halep. All these players that, you know, once Serena is retired, I mean, we do have to start looking at these next superstars.
And the tour is in good hands, I think. I mean, honestly, these kids, variety, personality, background in terms of geographic, socioeconomic. I mean,
and
it's
they're
cool.
20. And they're Those 20. Two are 20.
I know, it's great.
I mean, think about Serena and Venus still playing in their, you know, mid to late 30s.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if these guys will. The money's so big, but. Yeah.
It's an embarrassment of riches on the women's side.
Yeah, that's
awesome. I'm jacked about it. Honestly, when people ask me about my favorite tennis players, I have to remember that there's a men's tour. But let's get to the men's tour because I know we're going to have a lot to talk about with Serena. And I do want, you know, people who feel like this is a real vag fest to get the sense that we at least do occasionally care about men's tennis.
Yeah,
which I
sometimes.
Do occasionally.
Do we? What happened?
I don't know.
Just kidding.
Haha.
Well, Djokovic, you know, my guy, Delpo, I love him.
He's
just the big walking heart.
Don't we all?
I picked him to win the tournament. I put pressure on him when I saw him in the hallways at the US Open every time.
Yeah.
I was like, you're my pick, you know. Don't let me down.
Good.
And he's like, I will try.
Yeah.
He's just the biggest giant of a love fest as well.
And if anybody doesn't know anything about Juan Martín Del Potro, the Tower of Tendil, they call him.
Yeah.
Chloe Cooper-Jones, who's a writer for GQ, did an amazing story about him and his sort of spring and summer coming back from years and years of being sidelined with injuries, both
terrible
sides
injuries.
Of his wrists.
Yeah.
He won the U.S. Open in 2009, beating Roger Federer, kind of shockingly to a lot of people, went away for a while with injuries, came back and made it to the finals of the Olympics in Rio in 2016 and fell just short of Andy Murray winning the silver.
Yeah.
And, you know, reignited everyone's love affair with him.
Yeah,
again,
we
went
him.
Away with injuries and then won Indian Wells this year.
Yeah, we love him.
Handily.
Number three in the world. I don't know if he'll move up after the US Open, but, you know, Djokovic has just sort of solidified himself after winning Wimbledon and the US Open. Now he is well and truly back.
I mean, Delpo was in that match maybe for a game or two in the second set, but it was a Djokovic slaughtering.
So now the question has to be asked of who's going to be the guy who's going to have the most Grand Slams at the end of their career. Because
it's
a lot of
probably
people,
Djokovic.
But a lot of people feel that now Djokovic is sort of starting to climb back those numbers in the Slam title, and he's still so young.
Yeah.
And, you know, Roger struggled, and he hasn't played well since winning the Aussie. Mm-hmm. He's really struggled. And now you have to start asking the question, does age become a factor now? He was really affected by the heat, which is very unusual.
Yeah, it's the first time I've ever seen him
sweat in his life, and he's dying.
Yeah.
And I noticed that in the match before he did the post-match interview, and he was very short of breath doing the interview, which was, I was like, what is going on there?
Well, maybe, you know, 36 years finally catch up with
him. Like, really? Yeah. I was like, what's going on there? Because, you know, normally he's just so pristine and perfect.
Yeah.
So that's the question. Obviously, Rafa, you know, the hard court season, how much can he play on hard court?
That's tough
the
for
knees
2 weeks. Yeah,
it's tough for him. That's why clay is such a good surface for him. He doesn't get that same pounding on the knee. So, listen, we've counted those two out before. I have.
Yeah, sure. Me too.
So don't be surprised if they're back in the Australian Open.
Yeah, but Novak has a winning record against
all of them.
All of them, and a shockingly lopsided winning record against Andy Murray and Delpo, who are less likely to retire probably, at least given age, than Nadal and Federer. Yeah. Like, what's going to stop him? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
Not these young guns.
I don't think much now. I think he's got his confidence back, and he's got that what's the word?
Impenetrable?
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. That's why I'm
and
here.
I'm not even hungover today. wall back, you know, where he doesn't miss. So when he gets that, he gets the confidence. The serve is back because the elbow problems have now been fixed, apparently. Yeah. Then he's going to be really hard to beat in Australia because he loves that tournament. So
let me ask you one last question about the men's, because you have declared Novak Djokovic the favorite for Aussie.
Yeah.
I don't see any reason to disbelieve that. He'll probably win the tour finals.
Yeah.
What do you think about, we've kind of already discounted the generation that came after Rafa and Roger, you know, your Dimitrovs, your Tsongas, you know, these guys.
Yeah, done.
Right?
Yeah.
What about the team?
Yeah. Team
Zverev.
Is definitely, team will 100% win the French Open within the next 3 years.
Team came very close
to
making
100%
win
a semi
against Nadal.
Once Nadal's gone.
Yeah.
Once Nadal is gone, somebody else will win the French Open.
Right.
And it will be Dominic Thiem.
I mean,
no question about it.
I like his odds on clay, certainly. Oh. Hard court, grass, it seems like that's a
grass,
tall
no
order.
No chance. But if he does, well done. That means he's changed his thought process and he's standing more up in the court and all that stuff.
But what about like Zverev and...
Zverev, for sure, but Zverev has to...
Why can't he break through at these five-set
tournaments?
I don't know.
I think Getting Ivan on his team is going to make a huge difference.
This is Ivan Lendl. He of the incredible fashion during the 80s.
You love his fashion. You may still have a shirt of his.
I do. I have that
Adidas.
Do you
have the shorts as well?
I do.
Wow.
I'm a creepy lesbian who does a lot of eBay deep
dives. Even brought out your poor wife, Claire. She can't get rid of those feeler shorts that you brought out.
Those Borg shorts?
Yeah.
Yep.
They're monumental.
She's tried to throw them away numerous times.
They're monumental.
Claims me wearing them as vulgar.
Wow, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big word.
That's a success for a marriage when you countervail your wife's tendencies to throw away your clothing.
Oh, well done. Well, the rule is that if you buy something, you have to throw something out in your house, correct?
She is. She should have a book and a philosophy and tour the world helping people get rid of their clutter. She's a formidable
woman.
Oh,
she should come to my place because God knows I'm not a hoarder or anything, but shit, I have.
Although, there's a lot of trophies and Fed Cup outfits. What's in your house is really cool.
Yeah, that's true.
We could make millions.
I have a friend who is a little bit like that too, my friend Joe, who tends to buy shit and bring it into the apartment and doesn't tell her wife for about 3 days until she says, is that new? No, I've had this for months.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, everybody has their issues when it comes to buying shit, and I'm one of those people.
Well, let's leave that for our love advice podcast.
Yeah, sorry. God, we totally went
off
the subject.
Okay,
anyway, off men. Yeah.
Are we going to get to it?
Yeah, let's go.
Here we go.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, let's go.
Here we go. Serena Williams. How much backstory do you think Racquet Magazine podcast listeners need? Do we need to go break by break through this? Do we assume that they've seen it or at least
I think that most people have seen it. Let me give you the quickest, cliff notes. Serena got a warning for coaching. Her coach was seen gesturing with his hands forward, which is pretty innocuous, Caitlin. I know we're going to get
into the analysis.
This.
Just give us
innocuous.
The TikTok.
And so the umpire saw that and decided to give a coaching warning, which, what the fuck? We're going to get into that. And so she, of course, heard this, and I could tell that straight away she went back to return serve, and I could tell that her brain was going, fuck no, I'm not letting this go.
Mm-hmm.
I did not see any coaching. I'm not going to take this. This is now you're attacking my character.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember something. We have WTA, on the WTA tour, we allow a coaching visit every set.
Yes.
Serena Williams, I believe, has never used that.
Right. She does not need coaching.
She doesn't believe in coaching during matches.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't rely on coaching in matches,
mm-hmm.
or she would have used the coaching on the WTA tour.
Right.
So she's never done that. She's never used it. It's obviously, as an umpire, you also know as an opponent, there are certain players that you play against and there's certain players' boxes that you have to keep your eye out on, okay,
mm-hmm.
the
yep.
coach,
yep.
consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of top players that will remain nameless that have coaches that coach non-stop
mm-hmm.
from the stands, okay, and do not get coaching warnings because the umpire kind of just goes, how egregious is it?
Let's put a head on this. You are a coach.
Yeah, and I, there's no question I say stuff that would be deemed possibly as coaching.
Okay.
But how much can they hear? How much can they see?
How much are you actually affecting the player?
Coaches are got signals. I mean, I remember when Lisa Raymond and I were together and she would play matches and I swear to God, I would touch my right ear, serve it out wide. I mean, there are signals. It's mm-hmm. like baseball. So umpires don't even know what the signal is. You could have wiped your brow and that could be,
mm-hmm.
Chip and come into the net. I mean, there's so many signals that coaches can do.
Mm.
Tony Nadal coaches all the time.
Yep.
All the time. Everybody knows it. He even admits it.
The same umpire, in fact, called Nadal, not only in the past, they've had a lot of dust-ups, but also in this tournament for coaching.
But, you know, it happens all the time. He never gets called on it.
He does get called on
once
it.
Once in a
blue. All the time, and he got called in this tournament. I'm going to just fact-check the few things that are widely
by available. The same umpire, the US Open?
Yes, same umpire.
Okay. All right, so... Okay, so, but he is notorious at doing it, right? So good for him for calling him on it, right? I would say that Serena's not notorious for doing it. I know her well. Patrick, what he did, the signal he did was pretty innocuous. It was.
So you were surprised, in other words?
I was surprised that he was given a warning for that. And secondly, at the time, ESPN showed the split screen. She wasn't even looking at him at the time. So I know that's not the rules, the way it's written. If you see the coach coaching, you have to give a warning.
So technically a violation, however, something that most people get away with, that seems clear.
On a
consistent
basis.
Most people have interpreted this chain of events as... It was a stretch of a call.
Yeah, and he should have said to Serena, I think he should have given Serena the chance, knowing Serena, knowing that she's not one of those people most of the time, to say, Serena, tell Patrick to watch himself. And that happens often.
Yeah.
I would say that happens more than actually calling a coaching violation.
Okay, so let's get into what happened next, just to get people
break
caught up.
Break a racket. Now as a
code. Two games later, she breaks a racket, automatic code violation. Yeah. Nobody disputes that. If you break a racket, you get a code violation.
As soon as she did it, I went, oh my God, that's a point penalty.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay, so you have to remember two games prior to that when she's having the conversation with him at the chair, she's pleading with him that I didn't see any coaching, I do not get coach, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, I understand, you know, and he's trying to please her and say...
Diffuse
the situation. And she's like, okay, we're on the same page, right? So you understand me, right? Mm-hmm. I really think, in my heart...
She thought
he'd rescinded the warning.
But in... Not to take sides, because I think it's clear what sides we're both on this... which is yay tennis. You can't take a...
I know that.
Nobody can take it back.
I know that. And that is the one question I want to ask Serena. Did you think that he rescinded that warning?
Yeah.
Because why would you throw your racket knowing you're going to get a point violation at that time in the match? It's not a good time to throw your racket.
No.
Right? So...
Because most people, when they do get a warning, make a decision. Okay, I'm going to cool it or I'm going to antagonize this further. Like Benoit Paire, for example, broke three rackets, incurred you.
I mean, come
you know,
on.
If you know you're going to go there, you're going to go there.
I had a point violation at the Australian Open in my first round, the year I won the Australian Open. And I'd had a warning, and it was Pascal Marie was the umpire, and he and I now have talked about it. And we're friends. And I'm friends with, I would say, all the umpires that I've yelled at. And because most of the time I was right. But anyway, he asked... In the first game, my doubles partner, Lisa Raymond, had Achilles problems from time to time. And she said, oh, shit, I think I've just hurt my Achilles. And I was like, oh, my God, we need the trainer.
Yeah.
Now, I turned around in the middle of the game. It was the first game of the third set. And I turned around to him and I said, can you get the trainer?
Yeah.
It's juice. It's a huge game, all right? And he's yelling out to us, but I need to know for what? I go, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Just call the trainer.
Yeah.
Right? And we're trying to win this game. Can you stop talking to us? You know? Yeah. So anyway, it ensued. I walked up to him and I said... He goes, Renee, I need to know for what. I go, no, you don't. You just need to call the umpire. Now I'm getting super mad, right? Because I'm like, he's antagonizing me, which is kind of what happened the other day.
Yeah, and your veins are pumping with adrenaline. And you're
stressed out, man, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, I called him a French prick. And
a French prick?
A French prick.
Was he French?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he gave me a warning. Uh-huh. Now, on top of that, I had a point penalty. Now, Lisa is grabbing my shirt, literally, because he's now going back and forth to me. And I'm like, you're so wrong in this circumstance to antagonize me and keep going. You just needed to call the trainer. And shut up.
Right.
That's it. Right. So I got, you know, so amped and Lisa literally grabbed me. If I had one more back then, it was point game. It was gone. You're done.
Right.
See you later. And that year we won the Australian Open. So I can understand Serena's angst and anger to being accused of something that she really in her heart feels like she's not.
And by all accounts, she doesn't exchange signals that there are many players to do. Yeah.
But she walked after she got that point penalty. And she knew she had a second code, or didn't know she had a second code, and walked to the first court. She didn't. She should have walked to the love 15 or 15 love.
Yeah.
But she walked to the and she said, "What? What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
And he goes, "That was your second code."
Yeah.
So now in her brain, she's like, "You didn't rescind it? Oh, now you're calling me? You really are
and
calling
that,
me love?"
Escalated.
So now that escalated everything even more because she's like, "You know." So she's going out of her mind now, right? Now. Taken a point from me. And I believe, did she break that game that she was down?
When she was down 3-2, she came back to 3-all.
Yes. And I think here's the biggest problem. This is where I have a little bit of a problem with Serena.
Mm.
And I love Serena. But when it got to 3-all, she was back.
Yeah.
The crowd were on her side.
Completely.
She had everything going for her. and she played a fucking terrible game at 3-all. She double folded. She missed a back end down the line. She missed balls that she shouldn't have. I believe she may have even double folded twice. Or she made errors. Naomi was like, what is going on? She was totally overwhelmed at that moment. And Serena lost her serve. Now she's so pissed at herself. Okay. And now all the stuff that's happened prior is now coming back, and the umpire is going to get it now. Not, she should have given it to herself at that moment. Because at that moment, she was
What do you mean
back.
Given it to herself?
She should have controlled herself at that moment. Okay. And sat down and realized that really the onus then was on her. Because when it got to 3-all, it had nothing to do with the umpire now. It was all about how she was playing, and she did not play a great game at 3-all.
Yeah.
So when she sat down, she took her anger and her being upset out on the umpire and wanting an apology.
Yeah.
And kept going and belaboring that issue.
And of course, he
and then called him a liar and cheat.
By when being called a liar and a cheat, which by the book, people are like, oh, well, she didn't curse at him. Actually, the rule is not if you curse at an umpire, the rule is if you question the integrity of an umpire. So technically, again, a question of application of rules, certainly valid. Yeah. A question of what the rule is, black and white. If you question their integrity, calling them a thief or a liar, it is worse, in fact, than using F-bombs.
Totally. But
in your mind, is that justified that he takes a game from her?
No. Because I think at that moment, you have to understand as an umpire, you're the only one that can settle that situation at that moment. Serena could have. There's no doubt. I truly think that she made a huge mistake there of belaboring the issue with the point penalty and the coaching. She should have let it go. But she also, I know her, she didn't drop the F-bomb. I know you're saying it's part of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, she didn't get to the point where she's like, you're a fucking liar, you're a fucking cheat.
And, yeah.
You know, that would have been, oh, it's done.
So like, in your mind, she was exercising restraint.
She was trying her best.
Okay.
Yeah. So when she got up from that, I think you have to understand as an umpire, you're umpiring a U.S. Open final. It is a set in 4-3, and it's a break.
Yeah.
You got to stay away from that. You got to let that go.
Yeah.
You've got to let that go and let the players be the ones that end up deciding that match. And I think that that was a massive mistake from him. I think he overstepped by giving the coaching warning. I really do. And then I think he just kept it going. And that last one to give a game penalty was huge. Because Naomi Osaka probably would have got up, held serve, and been up 5-3. And we wouldn't have had this.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have had this over. It was already a problem, but she had that in 09 against, you know, Kim Clijsters with the foot fault and the, you know, I'm going to shove this ball down your throat. We've had that. We had in 04 the shit with line calls. We had 2011 against Sam Stoza with the come on and the point, you know, the warning there. And the, she's had her problems on that court.
Yeah.
That was a moment to say, I'm going to swallow my pride here. It may not be the right thing as an umpire because she has questioned my integrity, but do I really want to
insert myself
in this match now that is going to be obviously huge.
Right.
And that was a mistake from him.
The thing that...
And it took away, in the end, it took away from Naomi's victory.
I agree that Naomi's victory was overshadowed. From my perspective, she was going to win that match no matter what.
But here's the problem. Well, we'll never know.
Right.
That's my problem.
But I don't think we'll never know because...
Well, she lost a service game the one before.
Fine, but she beat Serena. Now, granted, a more diminished Serena.
She
Serena
served
without,
it out beautifully.
At 5'4", 20 years old, first Grand Slam final, playing her idol with the crowd lustily booing at this point.
It was terrible.
Terrible. The crowd has absolutely... like nothing but
no, it's terrible. Everybody
reflection
should be ashamed
to do.
It.
They should.
Yeah.
And I have friends who were in there who were booing, partially
shame
because they were confused, but also we can get to that. To me, what happened was you saw a player who was losing, who was getting
beaten, no question,
handily beaten. Everything Serena had to throw at her was getting thrown at
no
her.
No question.
And Naomi was handling it beautifully. And being a really, really big Naomi Osaka fan, to me, the question of, and I have and I will continue to sort of give every benefit to the doubt of what it is to be a woman, what it is to be a person of color, which I don't understand and I can only guess, and just cataloging the myriad ways that these Williams sisters, both Serena and Venus, but especially Serena, have been policed through their whole career. What anger, how much other people related to that anger and why and how it's been, stuffed back inside and policed by typically male authority figures. You know, I have spoken about that. You have spoken about that. We can talk about that more. But in this moment, what I was thinking was she's pissed. She's losing. She's trying to make the match about something else. More than anything else, was it a fight for women or people of color? I don't know. I think it was a fight for herself because she was on the ropes. Taking the officiating out of it, which maybe you can't do, but in the context of knowing how Serena is as a competitor, and you know her better than I do, so maybe this won't ring true, but I saw a player who was trying anything. Is that fair?
No, I don't think she was trying. I don't think it was. I don't think it was gamesmanship. Mm-hmm. I think it was her losing control.
Yeah,
and I think that Serena, you know, she has that personality. She'll admit it. I mean, she has a personality that can sometimes go off the rails and get very angry and and get, you know, sort of, you know, protecting herself, which, as you've already, you know, talked about.
For reasons we understand.
Which, reasons we understand. I mean, that Indian Wells episode still to this day is the second worst thing I've ever seen on tennis court, with the crowd booing her playing against Kim Clijsters. So, and, you know, she's gone through years of playing at the US Open. I remember commentating a sideline match, and I did a post-match interview with her, and I literally said to her, how does it feel to have this crowd support finally? Mm-hmm. I said those words to her.
What did she say?
Oh, it was fantastic. Obviously, you know, she replied great. And because there were years that she did not have support at the US Open.
And to be clear, the tennis establishment now treats her with reverence.
And the crowd. And
but
thank God.
That was not, many people forget, that was not the way that she had been treated forever. I remember commentators who are famous now who played alongside the Williams sisters who the rumors were that other people on the tour treated them terribly because they didn't basically want to make room for them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, we can go through a chronological order of the things that, you know, they've had to suffer through and et cetera. The bottom line is in this final, it was nobody won. Yeah. And I feel like in the end, I would have loved to have seen Naomi Osaka held serve at 4-3. And Serena holds serve to make it 5-4, and that kid serves it out the way she did, without any question mark or asterisk next to that scoreline.
Nothing but cheers.
Well, I mean, I don't know if she would have got cheers because it was quite obvious that the crowd was still going to be very pro Serena, which they should be. I mean, she's, you know, one of the greatest female athletes we've ever seen in the world, and she's American, and we're playing in America.
I don't know. I tend to disagree with that. I feel like tennis should be always applauded.
Ah, come on, go to Wimbledon when you're playing. Andy Murray, go to Australia when you're playing an Australian.
I think that's an unrealistic expectation on my part.
You know, I mean, in Paris, good luck playing a French person. I mean, what a nightmare! Still hearing, you know, French names in my head in Paris. But I mean, that's just a parochial crowd of what you should get when you're playing at home.
Home field advantage,
but. Yeah. What happened is that, you know, that's a sad asterisk to that match. And I would have loved to have seen that kid earn her right throughout the whole match in holding serve at 4-3 and holding serve at 5-4. Because I do believe she would have done that, but there's still that question mark. And that bothers me as a competitor.
Yeah.
I'm like, everyone's going to question that for the rest of my life. Everyone's going to question that. And that friggin' sucks. And I served out the match. There's no question. But what about that little extra help to get to 5-3?
Yeah.
He should have not given that opportunity for an asterisk.
Yeah.
And he should have said, this is the game right now. This match is bigger than me and my ego, and I got to let this one go. And I may be making a mistake. We saw an umpire get out of the fucking chair and stand in front of a tennis player a week earlier to coerce him to try.
That was awful.
That, to me, was egregious.
Nick Kyrgios should have been defaulted.
That, to me, was the worst umpiring I've ever seen. Agreed. Everyone's like, oh, he was trying to get, just trying to be a good guy.
No, don't change
You're
the course
an umpire.
Of the match.
You don't get out of a chair.
Yeah.
You say to him, if you don't start trying, I'm going to give you a warning.
Yeah.
There's a code for that.
Yeah.
He didn't get a code for that.
Yeah,
he was tanking.
Yeah.
He was tanking balls in the net. Now, I like Nick. So it's nothing against Nick. And if he wants to throw that match, let him throw the match. But it's not your job as an umpire to get out and encourage him. You're not his coach.
I would have been.
What about that?
Furious if I were Pierre-Henri Hubert, who lost the match.
Exactly.
Who was winning the match and that changed the course of the match.
That is egregious. What he did was, in my opinion, overstepped the line to not understand the big picture of that moment of a final of a Grand Slam.
Okay, so I disagree only in the sense that I don't think Naomi Osaka gets that asterisk. I think there's no doubt in my mind she wins that match.
I hope not.
Anyway.
I hope not.
And luckily for us, I think, and I feel like we both agree on this, she's going to have lots of other Grand Slams.
But she'll never have that first one back.
That
first moment.
Let's talk about how we can sort of, as a tennis community, use this scrutiny, use the things that Serena has brought up, whether they were applicable in this situation or not, about the way that women are officiated against, about the calls. There have been very, very many sort of spirited pieces of evidence thrown at this debate. Well, men got more fines in this tournament, but look at what Federer got away with saying, and Nick Kyrgios got coached by Leoni, and the guy got out of his chair and coerced him to try. I would love to see, and I think that this is a very doable outcome of this, let's have data. When Gina Davis got a sense in her gut that men were getting awarded all of the opportunities to direct, all the financing by Hollywood, everything that she knew helped the thumb on the scale towards keeping women down, she founded an Institute of Gender Studies, put numbers behind this stuff, and then thrust them in the face of anyone who would watch. And I, to her great credit, I think has been a large part of changing the tide and the conversation around women in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. What if we were to do something like that? I think that would be a fantastic outcome.
Well, you know plenty of nerds, so get on it, because I think that's a great idea. I think that's a great idea, and we should do that. I know that Tennis Australia has got an email from Craig Tiley the other day from Tennis Australia, mm-hmm. and they're already looking at changing some things down in Australia. They're trying to get a full consensus from all the players, TV people, mm-hmm. past players. I don't know what category I fall
into.
Can
you say what some of those are?
Yeah.
You're a leading luminary of the game. That's the category that you fall in.
I'm old. They are looking at coaching. Uh-huh. And
allowing it?
Allowing it.
For men and women?
Allowing it for men and women.
And do you think that that's good?
Yeah. I mean, let's just get rid of the ambiguity of this rule. It's bullshit.
100%.
And it's the only sport that doesn't allow it. And I hate coaching. Just let me just say, I've always been against the on-court coaching rule, because I think for me, as a player, I was smart. But I didn't have a big this or a big that.
But that was your advantage.
My serve was pretty good and my volleys were pretty good. But, you know, I didn't have, like, massive game, uh-huh. right? But I had a good brain and mm-hmm. I could analyze a match and I could go from plan A to plan B to plan C. Mm-hmm. Some players go, yeah. they just hit the ball big.
And that was your advantage.
And that was my advantage. Mm-hmm. So why are you taking my advantage away by giving it to somebody else to right. help somebody else get through a match? Mm-hmm. If I can control myself, my nerves, or, you know, my...
That should be
part of the game.
Right.
Okay, but we've thrown that out the door.
Realistically.
So if we're going to throw it out the door, yeah. TV love it, the crowd love to hear it.
Yeah.
Let's implement it in and get rid of the non-coaching rule, because it's just stupid.
And I think it would actually really help commentating. I've said this before and I mean it. You're, to me, one of my favorite commentators because you do a great job of actually explaining the game. It's not like, oh, he's feeling nerves. That doesn't mean anything to me, and I'm not singling out one commentator when I say that, although we both know I am. What I like about on-court coaching is it gives the analysts in the booth the chance to connect their thoughts and their read
yeah.
to what the coach is actually saying, and then changes that we're watching in the game. So not only does it help explain what we're watching, but it also allows people like me who are tennis players to take away something from the best minds in the game who are coaching the greatest and who are talking with the greatest on the court. Win-win-win.
Yeah. And now that with you know, SAP, with the WTA and the IBM stats we have at the Grand Slams, we can also put the numbers
yeah.
and the Hawkeye, yeah. the use of the Hawkeye, into this great debate as well of, you know, the coaching and then the this, and here's the numbers and here's how we can show. So we're only making the viewership much better for people at home.
Right.
TA is also looking at, you know, maybe taking the lead out of the game. They're sort of trying to find out if that's something that players are for or against.
Where do you fall on that?
I want to get rid of lets.
No lets.
No lets.
Yeah.
It's part of a point. Mm. Why should it not be a part of a serve?
Yeah.
And how many times has someone hit a great serve on a big point? It happened 2 years ago, I believe, with Serena in the Australian Open, or 3 years ago. She hit an unbelievable serve out wide and celebrates and let. And it's like nobody heard it except yeah. that stupid little machine that usually picks up just the vibration of the ball going over the net. The amount of times that's happened in mixed doubles, I'm like, let? What are you talking about?
Right.
Didn't even touch it. It's just,
yeah.
you know, it sets off that stupid little thing. And everyone's like, what about the dead net cord on a match point? I go, oh, when has that ever happened?
Yeah.
I mean, and you know what? And if it does, well, then so be it. What yeah. about when you hit a crap ball and it hits the net and drops over? What's the difference?
Yeah, it's a good point.
It's
okay.
It's just.
I'm convinced. No lets.
And it happens more that there's lets that aren't even heard or affect the serve
yeah.
that get called.
True.
And that's my problem.
Yeah.
And I hit that great serve out wide and I picked the right spot and she picked the wrong yeah. spot and I've hit and it just touched the net.
Yeah, players aren't like
get over it.
Getting a yeah. drop shot serve
no.
where they would. Yeah.
Okay. It happens in a point, so who cares? Like, let's. So that one.
What else?
I'm
fully
for.
Two for two. We're totally in agreement. Let's do this. Tennis.
What's the other thing? Oh, the fifth set tiebreak. Obviously, what happened at Wimbledon is, you know, it caused a lot of conversation. Isner and Kevin Anderson's epic five-set match, which mm-hmm. just ruined them in the final.
Yeah.
Nobody had a chance after that match. And, you know, when you see Kevin Anderson win the match and he's just like, well, that sucks.
Yeah.
You got to get rid of the extended set for the men,
yeah.
particularly in fives. I don't have a problem with getting rid of it, not getting rid of it in the women's best of three, mm-hmm. but I think in best of five,
yeah.
let's end it.
This argument has started to come back into favor because of the long Wimbledon mm. semifinal matches, both of them, mm. obviously the Isner-Anderson yeah. match in particular, stretched into a second day.
It was like three matches in one.
Five sets.
Well, I've always been a proponent of getting rid of five sets altogether.
Me
and then
too.
Then you stop the conversation of, oh, we're equal prize money.
That's
you guys
the
are
thing.
Playing more.
Equal like, prize money becomes a moot point because everyone's playing three
listen,
sets.
Listen, a boring three-set match at 6-2, 6-3, 6-2 is an extendedly boring three-set match.
I mean, I would argue the U.S. Open final.
Oh, yeah.
By the time you're getting to the Djokovic-Del Potro
extended
third set, it's like, oh, God, just put this up.
You know,
out
and
of
yes,
misery.
You have the odd match that two sets down, people come back and win a great five-setter. I'm like, listen. I've made this argument. Go and watch all the men's matches at the Olympics. They yeah. are phenomenal.
They're phenomenal. And
they're
three sets
unreal.
Except the final. Right. Three sets is the norm for almost
yeah.
all the matches.
And they're unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, the Del Potro-Roger Federer match at Wimbledon at the Olympics in London was unbelievable. 17-15 mm-hmm. in the third. It was great. Like, let's play extended third sets
yeah.
And play three sets.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, yeah, but what about the great five setters? I go, is it the five setters that you remember or is it the fifth set that you remember?
Exactly right. Nobody remembers
I don't
these
remember
obligatory
the
third and fourth sets.
I'm
They're
bored.
Such a snooze fest.
I'm bored. And I'm a tennis purist and nobody
Same.
Loves watching tennis or watches more tennis than me.
Yeah.
But I watched the Nadal-Roger Federer final at the Australian Open 2 years ago where everyone was shitting their
the
pants.
The fifth set is the only
like,
good set.
They're like, oh, this is the greatest match. And I was like, guys, I left four times in the middle of that match to go get a drink because I was so bored.
And I'm an alcoholic.
And I'm not an alcoholic. Well, I'd spent 2 weeks working, so it was the first match I actually watched where I could drink. And you know, that extended five sets made me drink. But, I mean, it was the fifth set was the only thing that was really overly exciting.
Those guys did not play good tennis at the same
no.
time, except for that one set.
Yeah.
So, really, what they're talking about is one good set.
The final set.
Agreed.
That's all. We just want the final set.
Exactly right. I want some urgency. I yeah. don't want to feel like, okay, well, you know,
well,
here
I don't
we
know
go.
If we're going to get that changed, Caitlin, but maybe hopefully we will one day. And
or
I
maybe
think the
just
guys
the
would
semis
appreciate
and
it.
Finals?
Yeah.
Don't ruin these guys' bodies.
Yeah.
For what?
Exactly.
So I have to watch a boring third and fourth set?
Yeah, exactly.
No, thanks.
Mary Carillo said to me, you know, you don't pay more money to watch a 3-hour movie over a 2-hour movie.
Right.
You just want to watch a good movie.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to think about when we're talking about five sets of tennis. And that is, you know, Wimbledon, oh, fuck. 5 hours of sitting and watching
yeah.
the same match.
I don't want to do anything
I'm sorry.
For 5 hours.
I'm bored.
Totally.
I'm totally bored. If it's a 3-hour match and it's exciting, that women's stuff at the Australian Open with Halep and Kerber and those guys. And
oh, yeah.
3 hours and 40 minutes. I mean, shit, that was like on tenterhooks the whole match because every point was important.
Yeah.
I've seen guys throw sets because they're down a break in the fourth and they go, fuck it, let's just get to the fifth.
Yeah.
I saw it happen at yeah. the French Open finals. Novak Djokovic was playing Nadal and everyone's going to write me and, you know, I'm going to get blown up on Twitter for this, but he totally tanked the fourth set because mm-hmm. he couldn't be bothered coming back. And I don't yeah. blame him.
Right.
I'm not going to blame him. It's the circumstance. Why would I try and come back?
Right.
Let's just start the fifth anew.
Why use your emotional energy
yeah.
and physical energy?
And what if I don't win this set anyway?
Right.
So let's just get to the fifth and let's go. Let's start from neutral. And that's what happens all the time in best of five. And guys that don't admit to that are lying. So anyway, that's the integrity of the sport as well for me. And I have a problem with that.
Okay.
So we're going to change
well, we
the world.
Fixed all the,
yeah.
We fixed all the tennis rules.
Call us. Commissioners?
Yeah. Commissioners, come on our show.
We should be the commissioners. We should get the commissioners on our show.
I agree. We're available for consulting at the low, low rate of $10,000 an hour.
Oh, thank God you said that.
That's
not
right.
Like $500.
No, come on. I'm an expensive.
The standards.
Exactly. All right. Setting all of the what has happened aside, let's briefly, before we're done, touch on what is to come for the rest of the year. You're going to go to Asia.
I'm going to Asia with Carolina and hopefully get her qualified for the WTA finals in Singapore, which is always a great event for everybody.
Yes. You're going to interview a few more
I'm
gonna folks.
I'm going to try and interview as many folks as I can on the road in places like Wuhan and Beijing, where guess what? There's not a lot to do in Wuhan. Most people like to stay inside the hotel because the pollution level is atrocious.
I'm sure the Wuhan
don't even
tennis
get me
officials
started on why
delighted.
We're playing in a place where you can't breathe. And players are playing out there for 3 hours. Mm. Not good for the lungs.
Great.
And I mean, you can hear mine,
yep.
you know, and I don't even smoke, which apparently you're stopping again. Is that right?
It's a struggle.
Yeah.
We're going to put this on the love podcast.
Is on the health podcast.
That's right. We're going to have spinoffs. You know, we're human beings. We have our vices. We have our proclivities. We're just trying to do better one day at a time. Right, Renee?
That's right. So anyway, I'm going to finish the year off there and then... And then I'm going to faint because it's been a long year.
Okay. So going into the last stretch of the year, we've kind of already previewed what's going to happen on the men's side. hard to imagine Djokovic doesn't just clean up and end up winning the tour finals. I mean, can anybody beat him? I mean, yes,
indoors,
probably in an
Roger.
Individual day.
Maybe Roger indoors.
Do you think Roger, given where he is with his season, is up for the task of taking him out one last time in Shanghai?
Yeah,
or?
I think he'd like to finish the year off on something worthwhile.
Yeah.
And then for the Australian Open, looking forward, I think that Serena's the favorite.
Yeah.
I think if she can keep herself fit and happy and healthy, you know, this is a year into her really coming back. I mean, she only came back in March. So I think physically she was much better.
And making two Grand Slam finals
within... come on. What she's done is is
unreal.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. It's a joke.
But
the nerves have got the better of her in these finals. And that's
an interesting thing
for me. But I think in Australia, she's always felt this incredible... relaxed environment there.
Yeah.
And I think that if she's going to break this record, be ironic or equal it, it'd be ironic that if she did it in Australia, next to the Margaret Court Arena and the Rod Laver Arena.
They should rename it Williams Arena.
Yeah,
they Margaret Court, but fuck you.
Your record's now been equaled and we're getting
Which wasn't a record anyway because nobody went to Australia during all those years, so I don't know why it was even a thing.
Anyway, touche and correct.
Yes.
But Serena, I think, will be really ready and primed to go there as long as, you know, she's up for the task physically. Seven matches is a lot and emotionally. But I think in Australia, I think at Wimbledon and the US Open, the emotions are a little bit higher for her.
Uh-huh.
Wimbledon is Wimbledon. Everybody.
Yeah.
It just has this aura around it.
It's magic.
The US Open, of course, for her being American, and she hasn't won it for a number of years, has always been a bit of an emotional struggle, Roberta Vinci, for her. I mean, on top of her trying to win the Grand Slam that year against Roberta Vinci.
Yep.
But I think in Australia, she feels really comfortable and really at home, and that the tension is not quite as high there as it is at those particular other Grand Slams that she made a final. So she's my favourite at the Australian Open. And I think Halep will be knocking on the door down there as well.
Yeah.
Our little Sabalenka and Osaka.
Oh, man.
Let's hope they get through.
Super excited to watch them.
Yeah.
Did they both qualify for Singapore, do you think? Do you think they make it? They
Osaka
cap off the
will,
year?
For sure, after winning the Open.
Yeah.
And Sabalenka is on the knocking on the door, but there's a lot that are knocking on the door.
The future is here, Renee.
It is. I'm excited. Get to talk about those two for a long time.
All right, let's go to rehab and come back and do it again.
Yeah, rehab.
Okay.
Therapy. Didn't you just come from therapy?
I did.
Oh, well done.
Thank you.
Give me that number.
I will.
And that's it for this episode of the Racquet Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Ruggieri, Taylor Dalton, and the team at Acast. Find us at racquetmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.